Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend John Couch, John engineering and producing our show on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to Buckmaster on Tuesday, Bastille Day, the day, the French anniversary day, July 14th, 2020. We're bringing people together in the Southern Arizona area on the radio in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. University of Arizona researchers since really March 14th have been tracking levels of the coronavirus genetic material in untreated wastewater from one of Pima County's sewage plants. One of the researchers very much involved in this is Dr. Charles Gerba, a microbiologist and professor of environmental science in the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Dr. Gerba, how are you?
Oh, doing fine. Keeping busy.
Yeah, I bet you are. And I wanted to update our listeners on this project. We first brought it to their attention when you were with us. It's been, almost 6 weeks at least. What's the latest on it?
Well, you know, we first saw the coronavirus appear in the wastewater around early March, and then it increased and then decreased when the stay-at-home orders actually really took effect. And then really on around June 27th, the levels were still fairly low, but between that and June 7th, they shot up about 10,000-fold the concentration of the viruses in the wastewater as a prelude, of course, to what we saw with the rapid increase in identified cases in the community. So it certainly was a well-weather of what was going to happen in the community. We never really expected the concentration of the viruses would actually increase that much.
What are you seeing right now? What's the latest? What was the last time that you had a report?
Well, a few days ago, and it was holding pretty steady about that, a fairly high level right now. We're certainly hoping it will decrease, but right now it's still fairly high, actually, surprisingly. So it does seem to be a fairly good indicator of what's going on within the Tucson community.
How do you gather your samples, Dr. Gerba?
Well, they're actually provided us by Pima County Wastewater at the Agua Nave Wastewater Treatment Plant. And so they provide them to us. And then we actually test and we extract the virus, and then we test for the concentration of the virus using molecular methods. And that gives us a quantitative number of the number of actually virus in the wastewater.
At one point, it was quite low, you said, during the shutdown?
Yeah, it actually decreased to barely detectable, almost below detection levels before it shot up again. So it did indicate that the stay-at-home orders had a significant impact on the spread of the coronavirus within the Tucson community.
This has really taken off. Cities around the country are now doing this, aren't they, Dr. Gerba?
Yeah, not only around the country, but around the world. Yeah, hundreds of utilities are now testing. We've processed over 200 samples now from not only different locations in the U.S., but also Canada. And we can see changes going on in the concentration of viruses in those communities. And there's also a network around the world under the guise of the World Health Organization. We're comparing results from, you know, different countries in the world, Europe, South America, Australia.
Has this been used with other pathogens?
It's only really been used in the past for poliovirus eradication programs, where they go into developing countries in the world and community. They test the wastewater to determine if there's any poliovirus cases actively present in the community. If they detect it, then they do a vaccination program within that community and look for decrease in poliovirus cases within the community. So it's actually been used for a little over 40 years for poliovirus detection of cases. Actually, it's pretty good. It's been used, for example, in Israel to track down cases. They were able to track down a case of a chronically infected person in Israel, in Tel Aviv, who was somebody working in the hotel district by just sampling the the sewer line upstream until they finally got to the location where the individual worked.
Let's talk about what we know when this thing broke. There were a lot of theories that it was very highly transmission. You could receive it by just touching certain objects. Have we fallen away from that thinking now, Dr. Gerba?
Well, we believe now the major route, I should say, is by, you know, large droplet transmission, although the evidence is certainly indicating that aerosols that persist in the air can also be a route of transmission. We don't have firm evidence that, you know, like touching surfaces, getting in on your fingers, putting your fingers to your nose, mouth, or eyes, they can be transmitted. But that may take a time before that evidence is gathered. We don't believe that's a major route, but it's still a potential route. We just don't have a lot of good data on that. But we do know from influenza and other respiratory viruses, they're very effectively transmitted by getting the viruses on your hands and then touching your face. All the coronavirus has to do is to get to your nose. And it would seem certainly intuitive that if you got it on your hands and you touched your nose, you would probably get infected with it.
What are you hearing about perhaps peak transmission right now or peak cases in Arizona? What's the latest thinking, Dr. Gerba?
Well, I think it was when the stay-at-home orders were released and people started getting together, going to bars and outside, inside public activities, I should say, that really caused a surge in cases that we're seeing, and certainly seemed to preclude the two follow the two holidays very well. And so I think it really was people really, I don't think, took it as seriously enough. Or they thought a lot of the risk was over. And actually, a lot of the feeling, too, was the hot weather would bring us some respite in the transmission of it, because it's known that largely mostly coronavirus and other respiratory virus, similar ones, are transmitted in the winter. But now the feeling is that there's so many people that are susceptible to it that the weather didn't make much of a difference. It may make a difference in the future, but it didn't this time, which actually surprised me a little bit based on historically these types of respiratory viruses. We see a lot fewer cases in the summertime, but I think there's just so many susceptibles out there right now that the weather's not going to make much of a difference in terms of the transmission of this virus.
What about air conditioning?
There's one, air circulation with it, and two, the temperature. The lower the temperatures, the better this virus survives. So that may be a factor, too. The other factor, a couple of us thought about who study infectious diseases, that, well, in the East Coast, everybody is on the inside in the wintertime, and that may have been very conducive to the cases we saw in the winter. Well, we do the reverse in Arizona. We come inside when the weather gets hot. That makes us closer together and may more conducive to transmission. So maybe that's something we overlooked before.
What are you thinking now, Dr. Gerba, about a vaccine? We've got this race to find a vaccine. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, knowing the history of vaccination and that, it does take a while. This is probably the most major effort in human history made to rapidly develop a vaccine by many unique ways we've never really tried before. But really, even when the vaccine is available, like some of the trials are using now, it takes months before we have enough data to show whether it's really effective or not. So I really wouldn't expect a vaccine to be available until the end of the year, beginning of the next year, because you just have to have evidence which one of these. There's several candidates out there that people are trying. Which one's going to work? We won't know for months, because the only way you can find out is to give it to people and see if they get ill or they don't get ill with the coronavirus.
Are you surprised about what has developed over the wearing of a mask?
Yes, I did. I know it's really, I think what we're seeing, it's a really cultural thing in the U.S. too. We don't really like masks here. We're in the Orient. They've always been accepted. If you've ever been to the Orient, you always see people in public, some people wearing masks. And here it's been a really cultural thing to do it. And you know, we see it, of course, very commonly now because it's required in Pima County and in the city and that. But I think it's taking some culture adaptation, if you follow the news in that. For even for myself, it's been taking an effort to get me used to wearing a mask all the time, because culturally you're just not used to it.
Have you done any traveling?
No, not to date. I will be doing some traveling coming up to look at ways we can reduce the amount of transmission during travel by the virus? What are the best strategies that might be used in protecting, like, airports, for example, in that? We're hoping to develop some strategies of cleaning and disinfecting that would reduce the risk when you travel.
Charles Gerba, always a pleasure. From the University of Arizona, thank you, Dr. Gerba.
Oh, thank you. Anytime.
Thanks. Dr. Charles Gerba is a microbiologist and professor of environmental science at the University of Arizona College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Coming up next, Shelley Fishman with our Tuesday Money Maker Report. And today is a pretty darn good day, at least so far on the markets. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. It was a good day on the markets, too, 24 hours ago, but then the market lost like 550 points in 1 hour before the close. So still, the day is still young, right? We'll be right back.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And his views are his own, but I'm very interested always at 12:20 each Tuesday to hear his views on the market and other things financial. And one thing we have talked about, first of all, good to see you, my friend.
Hi, Bill.
Volatility is if there were a kind of Time magazine word of the year so far for finances, volatility.
The volatility in these markets is just so astonishing that it's you know, it's hard to explain. Now, you know, the bad news is that trying to forecast what's going to happen or make any sense of what's happening is very, very difficult. Now, if you're a bank president who happens to also have a brokerage house, like Diamond does, you announce your results, and even though the normal things that banks do are cut way back right now, the revenue and profits they've made from this volatility because of all the trading have thrown the bank sector into, for the most part, really wonderful wonderful results. I mean, Jamie Dimon today announced results that were way ahead of where the prognosticators had forecasted.
On the other end, the Wells Fargo
numbers
are really
right now.
It's a troubled bank, right?
Yeah, they need to, you know, start dealing better with their customers, I guess. But they've run up against so many internal problems now that they've got to fix those before you can really look at their results and say those are typical of what the banking sector is really up to these days.
But if you're taking a piece of every trade, like you mentioned with the other bank.
I mean, you got, you know, Morgan and Chase and Citicorp. They're all sitting there in some ways benefiting from this volatility. And even though they may scratch their heads and wonder about how can the economy be doing so poorly,
right,
and the stock market doing so well, and that's something that you and I have spoken about for several weeks on this program, because it's hard to make sense of. And you know, Robert Samuelson in the Washington Post, who's not a liberal guy. I mean, this guy is mostly right of center. Writes about economics and writes about the economy. Tried to make sense of it on Sunday, and just was baffled. You know, as much as anybody else. The OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's a group of 36 countries. They came out just last week with two forecasts for the U.S. economy. One was the pessimistic view, and the other was the more pessimistic view. And, you know, in both cases, they're looking at, 13 or 14 or 15% unemployment by the end of the year and economic pullback, in other words, negative GDP growth in the area of 13 or 12%. Our own Congressional Budget Office has, a little bit more optimistic view, but they're still talking about a 6% decline for the rest of the year.
And that's still a lot of people out
exactly.
of work. Yeah.
You know, a 10.5% unemployment translates, again, the measurements are a little bit fuzzy because of how you measure certain categories, but it's still 20 million people out of work.
Right.
And so when you put that together and you take a look at the stock market, which, volatility aside, if you take the average and draw a line, yes, it went way down in March because of
the shock of the
pandemic, but then has come back, more than halfway to where it was, if it was at, 28,000 or thereabouts. I think it might have peaked at 29 on one day. It didn't close there.
We're almost
but
back.
But right now,
aren't
we're almost
we?
Back there. And you scratch your head. And so yesterday, we're up 560 points at one point, and then we wind up the day flat. Mm-hmm. So what gives? Mm-hmm. So you got to really get into these numbers in a little bit more detail. One of the things is that the five largest companies in the S&P 500 are companies that have not been badly affected by the pandemic. And I rarely name companies in this segment, but let's do that. It's Microsoft, Facebook, Apple, Google, which is Alphabet, and Amazon. Those five companies are the dominant forces in moving that index. And they make up about 20% of the market capitalization of the whole S&P 500. And they're up considerably during this pandemic. So, yeah, what we're seeing is good movement in the top 30 companies and in the most affecting members of the S&P. But when you get into what more cyclical companies are doing, you find out they're not doing all that well.
Right. Those other five companies you mentioned are pretty much driving
precisely
the whole market.
Right. There are some other things. I mean, we talked about gamblers getting into the market.
Right,
you know,
right.
We talked about computerized trading and
the day traders.
Samuelson, the day trade, right. Samuelson talks about those kinds of things, but then he comes up with something which is really interesting, and he gets this from a guy by the name of Robert Shiller. Now, Robert Shiller, for all financial analysts, financial advisors, is a guy that we all learn about because he's a Nobel Prize winner, and he came up with a whole theory of how to analyze markets, which nobody understands. It's just this graph of how companies fall into certain categories, and we all look at it and say, well, what is the most efficient market index? And we scratch our heads and pretend to really understand what he was talking about. It's very complex. But he came up with something that was really interesting. He said there's a crowd psychology that's going on right now in the markets. And that crowd psychology is driving the volatility and driving prices up. And then he talks about something called the FOMO market.
Which market?
The FOMO, F-O-M-O in caps, which means fear of missing out.
Oh, okay.
So we had all of these young people in 2008, 2009, were terrified by what happened when the market dropped 40%, but then it came right back. And so there's this fear that if they react in this market cycle like they did in 2009, that they're going to miss out on the recovery. So that's driving a lot of the volatility and kind of underpinning a lot of what's going on in the market. But most important in my view, and I think the view of people like Mark Zandi, the two things that are propping up the economy and keeping optimism high right now, Bill, are one, what the Fed has said they will do, which is whatever it takes to keep the economy going and keep markets propped up. And the other thing is what Congress has done and continues to talk about doing in the future, which is pumping more and more stimulus into the economy. I believe that's the right thing. I think they got to do more of it, and I think we will see more of that happening. But those two things, when you take all of the emotions out of this, those two things are very important. To give you just an idea of what the scale of that stimulus is, in the month of June, the deficit, now not for the third quarter, the month of June, the deficit was over closer to $900 billion.
Oh my goodness.
Now, remember, we had a $900 billion deficit and we for the year, and we thought that was horrible.
Yeah.
This is for the month. We're going to have a $3 trillion deficit for this year. And could very easily maintain those kinds of high deficits for a long time to come. Now, traditional economists will tell you that's a disaster. Modern economists will scratch their heads and say, if it's a disaster, why haven't we had that kind of inflation? Why haven't we seen the effect of all of that deficit spending on the economy? On the negative side, it's only been on the positive side. So, truly, I think economists are scratching their heads and trying to figure out where the real effectors of the economy are. And I have not yet seen a cogent, coherent, overall overarching view of what the effect of government spending on the economies over long periods of time could really be. And we're now pushing the limits, I think, of even what, you know, the neo-economists have said, is, you know, which is you can keep on deficit spending for a while and it's not going to make much of a difference. But nobody anticipated $900 billion months.
That's a big price tag. And I think that underpinning and the foundation, whatever it takes, those three words by the Fed are really important for moving forward.
You know, I think ultimately that's what's got mm-hmm. the more mature
yes.
kind of balanced mm-hmm. investors thinking, well, whatever happens,
they're
going to cover us yep. or at least cut our losses.
There you go. Shelley Fishman, I hope you have a great week. You're still looking great, working out. And boy, that home gym was a good investment.
Best thing ever.
Boy, you were a little ahead of your time there. You must have had a crystal ball there and foresaw a lot of time.
I can do a lot of time at home, right?
Yeah. All right, Shelley, have a great week. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take our mid-show pause. Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We'll be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, of course, our go-to location for everything green. So many people doing gardening these days, and the place to get everything you need for the garden is at Green Things. 50 years and still growing, and they're at 3384 East River Road on 13 acres. Everything you could possibly imagine. Amazing plants, trees, annuals, and more, and great talavera pottery, antiques, fine arts, handmade furniture as part of the Zocalo Village. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the two websites. Our 2020 Your Voice, Your Vote candidate interview series continues now with Daniel Wood. Mr. Wood is a Republican who hopes to unseat long-term United States Representative Raul Grijalva in CD3. Daniel, how are you?
Good, sir. How you doing?
Doing real well. Why did you decide to get in this and go against Raul Grijalva?
Well, you know, it's time to get rid of Grijalva. I'm just so tired of these career politicians and really attacking our nation and trying to, seems to me, destroy our nation. You look at Grijalva, I mean, a career politician. He's right now currently wanting to defund the police. He believes in riots and violence in my mind. He wants to abolish our Second Amendment rights. I mean, just look at that. If he's trying to defund the police and the riots and his violence to start getting into our neighborhood, you know, you look at his Romero, his puppet. She's in there trying to defund Tucson PD. We've got to stop that. We need people that's going to stand up against that stuff. And just these are some of the other reasons. I mean, getting rid of Grijalva, he wants open borders.
How about yourself? What is your background, Daniel?
Yeah. So I'm a Marine combat veteran, former law enforcement officer myself, and executive protection agent. I've been married for 18 years to my wife, Beverly, and we got three boys who she homeschools. And prior law enforcement and Marine Corps, that's pretty much where I come from.
And a Republican, lifelong Republican, or what?
Yes, sir. I've been a Republican since I can remember. As soon as I was 18, I filed as a Republican and been one since then.
Have you? This is such a Democratic district. What is the strategy, Daniel Wood, to get rid of Grijalva, as you say, to get rid of him?
You know, it's just going to be showing people what I stand for. You know, it's just complete opposite of Grijalva. I believe a large majority, even though it's a Democratic stronghold, I believe a large majority of the Democrats are tired. They're tired of seeing people like Grijalva tearing apart our nation and taking away our rights and, you know, pushing for illegal immigration. It's just open borders. They don't want that. They want the closed borders. They want protection. They want to protect our freedoms. And that's what I'm looking at.
Where did you grow up? What's your hometown?
So I'm a military brat in the military myself, so I moved around quite often. I didn't really grow up in one area. I've been in North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Alabama. I've been briefly in California and now here in Arizona. Loving it. Loving Arizona.
What specifically... What really gets you? You've mentioned a couple of things about Congressman Grijalva. What would you, if you were to be elected, how would you change things? What would your priorities be, Daniel Wood?
So my one thing I'm really, really strong about right now is with these open borders, it's brought in human and drug trafficking. With my law enforcement background, I know the evils of it, and I want to fight against it. A lot of people don't know within human trafficking, $36 billion industry just in America alone, 40-50% of that comes through the Arizona border. Now, District 3 is probably approximately anywhere from 85 to 90% of that border. And so He's been here for 18 years and has done nothing to fight against that. And we've got to fight against that. That's one of the big problems that, you know, I want to face and go after. Another thing, health care. You know, Grijalva wants the whole, he wants to give free health care to illegals. No, that's our taxpayer money. And, you know, I, as someone who had great health care until Obamacare stepped in, you know, I want to fight for our health care system, transparency and you know, lower cost, and going, maybe opening up our insurance, you know, state to state, so we can have competition, things like that. Education is very important. They're starting to take away our, in education, they're taking away the constitutional studies. They're pushing sex ed. That's just, you know, they've got something that come out. It's almost a pornography book. You know, they're taking away, you know, Common Core doesn't even teach our kids. We need a new innovation. It's schools all sent back in industrial age. So we've got to get in there and quit kicking out our conservative teachers also.
What do you think about students going back to class in this day of the pandemic?
You know, I trust our president, and he knows what he's talking about. We had this pandemic, and it's not going to take, we're not going to take away from the coronavirus. It's there. But what's not being showed and what's being lied about, I think, is the fact that the deaths have really gone down. The only reason why we have a large amount going up is because we have more testing. And so, and it's come out too that the children are very resilient against this. That's why Trump even said what he said. He said they are very resilient against this and fight, their bodies fight it very much so. It's usually, what it does is it attacks our weak, it attacks the very, the weak immune systems in our older folks. And we need to protect them. We need to look out for them. And I agree with that totally.
Daniel, before we let you go, where can people find out more about you and your campaign? It's a tough time to be campaigning, to go virtual all the time. So how are you getting the word out there?
Well, Daniel Wood for Congress. If they can go to danielwoodforcongress.com, that would be a start. I have been going and doing meet and greets and respecting everything that I can as far as meeting with folks and letting them know where I stand. I go door to door. What I do is I'm dropping off pamphlets right now because I want to respect those who are still worried about this virus. So I'll drop off pamphlets and put them on the doors. And if someone's out, I'll keep my distance from them. And we get to talk. I got to talk to many folks, Democrats alike. And you'd be surprised at how many, even Democrats, are saying they're going to vote Republican. They're very tired of what the Democratic Party is standing for.
All right, Daniel Wood, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us.
Hey, thank you. DanielWoodForCongress.com. Thank you, sir.
Thanks. Our 2020 Your Voice, Your Vote candidate interview series. We have archived all of our interviews at KVOI.com, kind of our clearinghouse for all our candidate interviews. Coming up next, our Arts Report with Margaret Regan on The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. When you're ready to take a trip, and a lot of people are getting ready, if they're not really ready to jump in the car now, they are thinking about, boy, I sure would like to get away here and carve out at least some semblance of a summer vacation. Well, southwestnewmexico.org is a good starting place, because that's the website at Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just a three-hour drive over to a very beautiful area of the Southwest. And with the monsoon rains greening up that Silver City area, check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Yes, it's cooler over there because of the elevation. You'll find places to stay on the website, ideas for recreating, just a good place to get your planning underway. Time to welcome Margaret Regan, who is the author of two prize-winning books on immigration, Detained and Deported, Stories of Immigrant Families Under Fire, and The Death of Jocelyn, Immigration Stories from the Arizona-Mexico Borderlands. Margaret has been writing about the arts for the Tucson Weekly since 1990, and it's very serendipitous to have her on the program today, because today is Bastille Day, and at one time, Margaret was the French editor for TV Guide magazine, so you must know French pretty darn well.
Well, let's just say back in the day I did.
Wow.
So I don't have too much opportunity to speak French anymore, but thanks for reminding me. Yes,
yeah.
I was the French editor of TV Guide magazine.
So I assume you studied French in school.
I did. That was my major in college, and I spent my junior year in Paris. Very glamorous. So back then, that was wonderful. I did know a lot of French. But gosh, you know, it comes back to me if I hear it, but I feel nervous about it. If somebody saw it on my resume one time and wanted me to give a talk in French, and I can't do it anymore. But
yeah,
I love everything French.
Well, you're busy putting together a story for next week's weekly, July 23rd, and really a lot of loose ends that need to be tied up, Margaret Regan, about our performing arts community. We do have some openings. I think TMA is going to try to get things by the end of the month up and running. What are you focusing on? What can you bring us up to date on?
Well, this story, the most recent story I did was what the art museums were doing. And that's where I did write about Tucson Museum of Art. They were trying to open early July. It didn't happen. And they're thinking now of late in the month. But this time I'm looking into the various performing arts groups. And that is a rough field to be in, because, you know, not only are we having the virus here, you have all these presenters have to get these artists traveling all around the country. These are not just local people that you can, you know, look to.
Right.
There's this whole touring art group, you know, all these people they travel around. And the new director of the Fox, Bonnie Schock, told me that nobody's traveling right now. I mean, and why would they? You know, things have been canceled all over the country. Everyone's fearful, and, you know, and traveling is problematic in and of itself. So what they did at the Fox the other day, well, just last week, the Fox had been hoping for a fall season. And Bonnie and the board announced last week that they're not doing it. You know, they suspended. Nothing's happening until the new year. And, you know, somebody willing, we hope that things will start up again. I think they, you know, they pushed a lot of the shows that had already been planned. They pushed them to the new year. An Irish band that I've been waiting to see was canceled when things first started going down in Arizona, you know, mid-March. And then they were rescheduled. They're called Altan. Then they were rescheduled for November, and now they're rescheduled for next March. So, you know, everybody just has to keep being nimble and just changing things as necessary. But Bonnie said, you know, that what can they do? First of all, people would be afraid to come into their theaters right now. You know, you don't want to have too many people gathering in one place. They don't have the artists to come in right now. And even if they did have artists to come in and they had to do the social distancing, it would be difficult to make enough money, you know, because you'd have to sell fewer tickets. So it's difficult to get enough money to pay the artists and all the people that help them.
It's just not. I think many are just waiting to the for a vaccine for the end of the year. I think that hopefully the vaccine. Does this extend over to UA Presents, the Rialto, and what about?
Yeah. I mean, they're all, you know, I hate to say it about them, but they're all in trouble financially. Now, U of A Presents, I haven't spoken with them. You know, it's hard to reach people over there in the summer, and they've just been closed down for months. But they do have on their website that they are going to make an announcement in August. So they're just kind of waiting and seeing, I guess, how things will be. I suspect it will look like a very different U of A Presents season. We might see more local artists. And maybe in smaller venues. You know, UA Presents, I don't know if you've noticed this, they have been doing a little concert series over the summer, which has been kind of charming. They're getting different local musicians to perform in the botanical garden, which is very pretty. But then you watch it live online.
Right.
Just the artist over there and the film person. So they have been trying, you know, to just keep their hand in. So I'm wondering if they said, you know, they're going to see what happens and announce next month. Maybe they'll be doing more things like that, and maybe not so many of the great big shows. The Rialto, same boat as the Fox. You know, it's such a shame to see these organizations that have been doing so well for so many years. You know, when Bonnie and I were talking about the Rialto and the Fox, you know, both of them are beloved historic buildings. And it was about 15 years ago that both of them were restored and reopened. And what a treasure for downtown and for Tucson to have those wonderful places.
And then I was just thinking about Bonnie, who really started, talk about bad timing.
She took over
when Greg Sundberg went back east to the New York area. And then Bonnie, I have not met Bonnie yet. I look forward to it. But you talk about bad timing coming in and then this happening, right?
I know. Okay, yeah. Just to lay it out, her job started on Monday, March 9th.
Oh.
And that was the day, if you remember, things started happening that day.
Yeah.
That's when they canceled the Tucson Festival of Books.
Oh.
By that Thursday, her fourth day on the job, the Fox shuts down.
Yes.
Shuts down for the rest of the season. And they had to hurriedly get those Irish people out of here. You know, and the Irish people, you know, the band that was supposed to play that weekend that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
They hurried back to Ireland. Everybody was fearful, of course.
Yeah.
So here's Bonnie. She's got a husband and son in Minnesota, where she's from. So she said after, she thought it would just be a couple of weeks, so she was staying here in a little apartment, But after some weeks and the shutdowns went in, she thought she better go back home to her family. So she did. So she's been working. She still has the job as the executive director, but she's in her old place in Minnesota. So that's why you haven't met her, and that's why I haven't met her, because she's been here for such a short period of time. But she seemed pretty dynamic. You know, she was telling me she's met a lot of the other arts leaders in town on Zoom, and people talk regularly, and they're all trying to help each other, and she's met some of the donors. So she's hoping that she'll get back here like mid-fall. Because now, you know, they're definitely not having any shows then. But she's hoping that by, the say, October, things will be better and things will start opening up again.
Quick question. The Botanical Gardens has reopened, haven't they?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then TMA is going to try to open the end of the month. So
yeah. The last time I talked to them now, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a little easier in that regard. You can do the social distancing. I would think at a museum, you limit how many people come in. But the performing arts area, nothing's going to happen until 2021, and everybody's keeping their fingers crossed for a vaccine.
Right. And, you know, this is, of course, all across the country.
Yeah.
Broadway in New York, of course, you know, the epicenter of theater in our country, they're saying no way anything's happening before January. You know, think of those seats in all those theaters. You're pretty cozily sitting next to the person next to you, and they're coughing, and, you know. And we were talking about, I read an article in the New York Times, the head of the Metropolitan, New York Metropolitan Opera, said, look, I could get singers and musicians in here, but I can't do it without filling all my seats.
Right.
The finances of it.
Yep.
It's very, very expensive to perform these. And it's something like opera. That's many, many people involved. And you couldn't get enough people in the audience.
Gonna have to run. Margaret, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
That's it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of engineer producer John Couch, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Have a great afternoon, everybody.